Here's what's popping on today's episode.
He would often say, if you want something, you're going to work hard for it. But if you need something, you are willing to lie, cheat, and steal to get it. And I often feel like with perfectionism, it makes you feel like you need.
But I know one thing my dad did do to the very best of his abilities was show up for us.
Hi, you guys. Welcome back to Popping Perfectionism.
Hello.
Today, we are going to be talking about perfectionism in the workplace, specifically when it comes to work-life balance.
Yes, something that's very difficult to strike, especially in a grind culture, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, how have you been lately? Oh, dude, just so busy.
Oh, yeah. And especially when you're seeing all these freaking 14-year-old influencers who are like, I made $23 million this year.
I know.
And you're on your couch scrolling on
your
phone.
You're like, awesome.
Okay, dude.
So we will be talking about how perfectionism influences work-life balance for the worst, I think.
Oh, for sure.
And to illustrate all of these points, we're going to be bringing in research that we have found online through experts in consulting, perfectionism, all of these different types of things. And we'll weigh in our two cents with our perfectionism expertise just to kind of highlight what everyone else is saying. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of life experience and a lot of good studies.
Lots of life experience.
It'll be great.
Yes.
It'll be great.
This episode of Popping Perfectionism is brought to you by Market Social. Run your event like a human being. Simple event marketing and management built on text messaging so you can reach your people. Check out their link in our show notes. And if you're enjoying this episode, pause the show now and give Popping Perfectionism a 5-star review.
For the first article, it is from Joe Robinson, if you guys want to look him up. He is a keynote speaker, consultant, yada, 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 all that good stuff on performance strategies and specifically in the workplace, how to capitalize on effectiveness when you're at work and, you know, all of these different things. So he understands very well what work-life balance can look like if you have the right strategies. So I'm just going to read from a quick article that he wrote called Perfectionism and Work. Perfect.
It's literally exactly what we're talking about.
Yes. So this is just taken from the middle of his study a little bit. So if you want to go read the whole thing online, again, you can just search Joe Robinson, Perfectionism and Work. Mm-hmm. He says, as if there aren't enough stressors in the workday, here's one more you might not have been aware of that is a very effective driver of pulse rates. Guilt.
Yes.
Specifically, work guilt. A condition that drives perfectionism, employee friction, low job satisfaction, and bad work-life balance. It makes people do more than they can do well, put their health at risk, and undermine productivity.
And I want to comment quickly on that last line where it says it makes people do more than they can do well, because that, right, perfectionism is all about your image, right? Perfectionism is all about looking like you have everything together and like you're doing a lot and you're high achieving, which often leads to a person being high achieving, right? Mm-hmm. But what you sometimes don't see with perfectionism is it often caters more to quantity over quality. And so it's this idea, right, that like, oh, I'm doing so many things, right? I'm so busy, right? I'm doing so many things, but they're not getting done well. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's also another side to perfectionism where you don't do things unless they're perfect, right? You don't. And so then it's also like, I don't know, it's just like this horrible catch-22 where you're doing more than you can do well, but then you're also killing yourself to do everything as perfectly as you can.
Yeah.
Which of course leads to burnout, right? Which is why we're talking about work-life balance. So
yeah, and I think perfectionism in work might affect you differently. Like you were just saying, it might cause you to do more than you can well, right? Or it might cause you to do less than you can because you're so focused on doing one thing perfectly.
Yes.
So in this specific study, it's trying to illustrate the point that people are trying to do so much, but they're half, I'm not going to say the swear word, they're half doing it well because they can't put their full effort into it because they want to do 100 other things because they feel like they should be doing 100 other things to keep up, to be at the top, to blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I think basically what he's saying in this paragraph too is, you know, perfectionism causes a lot of guilt, which causes a lot of burnout. And it's kind of like this hustle culture. I know hustle culture is big in Utah. I don't know why. I mean, I know I heard this somewhere. Don't quote me on this, but like businesses thrive really well in Utah.
They do.
And there's a lot of like startup businesses in Utah, a lot of entrepreneurs in Utah. So there's a lot of people that are on the grind here and who struggle having this work-life balance because of perfectionism. So again, just to highlight what he's saying, we're not doing all that we can well, or we're not doing everything we can, period, because we're afraid of not doing it perfect.
Yeah.
We're putting our health at risk, which is a concern, obviously, and we're not being as productive as we, you know, as we have the potential to be because of perfectionism.
Yeah.
So the next paragraph, he says, unlike engaged employees, okay, side note, perfectionist employees are also not engaged then.
Yes.
Because they're so focused on the task. They're focused on themselves. They're stressed. They have guilt. They have anxiety. So they're not engaged, which is an issue.
Because one of the things that we talk about, right, is the antithesis to perfectionism is connectionism. And, you know, connectionism is all about connecting rather than, you know, trying to be perfect. Instead of, you know, valuing perfection, you value connection. Mm-hmm. And you really can only connect with someone if you're being present with them. And you can't be present with someone or doing something if you're totally focused on and being distracted by doing it perfectly or being perfect.
Or even like just maintaining the image that you're doing it perfectly.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we know we're not doing it perfectly. We know we're not like we're not doing everything we can, but it's just that trying to maintain that image that you are doing everything, that you are doing it perfectly, and thus not allowing you to connect with other employees, with friends, family, which we'll get into because this is work-life balance.
Yeah.
Unlike engaged employees who willingly bring effort to the job with vigor, absorption, and dedication, people driven by guilt to do the work unwillingly because they should, not because they want to.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that because that drives so much of what perfectionism pushes for is everything you do and everything you think is because you should be doing it and you should be thinking it. And then we've talked about this before, right? When you beat yourself up over something, you often think like, oh, I should have said this. I should have done this.
It's the
shooting on yourself. Yeah. And so it's this like, it's on both sides of it where you're only doing things because you feel like you should do them. And then when you don't do things perfectly, you're like, oh, well, I should have done that. I should have been better. And it's like, it's not productive, right? Like we've talked about it. And then it's also really damaging for your mental health, self-esteem, relationships, everything.
We need a shooting on yourself shirt. Don't shoot on yourself.
Yes.
That's what we need. Ryan, yes. He's giving us big thumbs up.
Our producer says yes. So we're going to do it.
So that means yes. I think another form of shooting that he introduces is not looking like in the past, like I should have blah, blah, blah. But it's like I'm doing this because I should.
Yes.
Like if we're doing, imagine if we did this podcast just because we should, like we're just expected to.
It would be the worst.
Yeah. Like I would not bring, like Joe mentions here, vigor, absorption, dedication. I wouldn't bring any of that to the table on this podcast if I were doing it because I should.
Yes.
And you've mentioned this in the past where perfectionism is trying to maintain that image of like, I am doing this because I should be a good friend.
Because I want to look like a good friend.
I want to look like a good friend or look like a good mom. Yes. So I'm doing this because I should. I'm showing up at work because I should. I'm doing this project because blah, you know.
Which also like I, for one, don't want people in my life like that. Like I would not want someone in my life because I feel like they should be there, right? I don't want friends who feel like, oh, well, I'm Anna's friend because I should be her friend. Or I'm showing up for her because I should show up for her. Like that's like, it just, perfectionism is so weird because it like convinces you that like looking like these parts will make you happy and give you successful relationships and success in general. But like the receiver of perfectionism doesn't want it either. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't want people in my life who are only there because they resentfully feel like they should be.
Right.
I wouldn't want employees who are doing their job just because they feel like they should be doing it or doing it a certain way because they feel like they should do it that way. I want people who are genuinely in it, you know? Whether it's personally or professionally.
And what's tricky about this is, like, I'm trying to think of a job, for example. Okay, let's pretend I'm, like, a janitor or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be stoked about being a janitor. You know, it's like a lot of us do show up to work because we should. Because work, at the end of the day,
Who wants to work?
It's a means to an end.
Yeah.
Like, we all understand that. We all know that. But I also do believe that the happiness in your job or the satisfaction in your job is something that you create. Mm-hmm. It isn't like held in the title.
Yes.
Of your job that will make you happy. So I think this might just require a shift in mindset of like, okay, maybe I don't necessarily want to do this certain task, but I'm doing it because I can provide for myself or my family, mm-hmm. or I'm doing this for like professional development, or I'm doing this because I know it's going to take me to a next step.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go to work and do this because like I'm excited to see my coworkers and I want to be a contributing team member. So I think just trying to maybe shift some of these tasks, because work won't always be exciting. It's not something you're going to have vigor and absorption and like a pep in your step for.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, totally.
It's just something we all have to do. But I think so much of it is fighting the autopilot in our minds of just like going through the day to day, being grumpy about this. Or I think perfectionism is also an autopilot mindset, because I think we're competitive in nature. We care what people think about us in nature, because we do care about people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I think just try and be conscious of like how you view work, and if it's like I'm just doing this because I should.
Yeah, I think it's very much the intention behind it, right? And again, it's like, am I doing this? Wow. I sound like crying. I was going
to
start crying.
I'm like, oh, I was not expecting this to get that deep this soon.
First tier on the podcast, and it's in the most random place. Like, am I doing this because it's a means to an end, and I have, you know, intention behind it and strategy behind it, whatever. Because like you said, there's just going to be parts of your job you don't like. It doesn't matter what profession you are. It doesn't matter if you're a doctor, if you're a marketing person, if you're, you know,
a teacher.
Like, it doesn't matter. No. Like, there's just stuff you're going to not want to do. But it's about like, okay, am I intentionally doing this, you know, with intention and strategy behind it? Or am I doing it because I want to look like a person mm-hmm. who knows what they're doing, or because I want to look like a person who blah, 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 blah.
Right.
I think that's the key to it, is assessing your intentions behind it.
Yes. Yes. So Joe is saying, wait, is his name Joe?
Joe. Oh,
it is Joe. Our sorry. Boy Joe. Anytime I say Joe, I think of my therapist, Joe. So I was like,
because Alicia and I used to have the same therapist. Mm-hmm. And he actually said something that this reminded me of that I wanted to say, that you actually told me, was that he would often say, if you want something, you're going to work hard for it. But if you need something, you are willing to lie, cheat, and steal to get it. And I often feel like with perfectionism, it makes you feel like you need that validation. Mm-hmm. You need that image. You need whatever, right? The high achievement status, whatever. And so you're willing to cut corners. You're willing to burn out. You're willing to do all these things to get it. Whereas if you're an engaged employee and you just want these things, right? You're willing to bring the extra effort, then you're just going to work hard for it. You're not mm-hmm. going to cut those corners, whether those corners are for your mental health or your relationships or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And since we're all in that vein, something else that just came to my mind was a quote from Dieter F. Uchtdorf, and he's a leader in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he talked about doing things to like seek the reward or seek the praise of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, basically, when your intention is just to like get praise from everyone and it's for the applause and whatever, and it's not for something bigger than that, then you have your reward.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is interesting, because if you're doing all of these things in work for the applause or to appear as the best employee or to get that like badge of achievement, like congratulations, you're going to get it. But it's like, then what? Then there's always going to be another thing to like move forward to, or there's always going to be someone better. There's always going to be something bigger. And instead of just like creating happiness in the job that you have, doing it because you want to, going to work because like, and doing these tasks because it is your life and you want to create happiness in your life. You want to create that work-life balance in your life just to make it happy, not for the applause,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I think so too.
So again, so he's saying engaged employees bring vigor, absorption, dedication. He then says these employees who have perfectionism, doing things because they quote unquote should, they bring resignation, resentment, and self-defeating heroics to the task and cause others to do the same, setting off conflicts with colleagues who feel they have to go above and beyond what's productive just to keep up. These are not hallmarks of engagement, which is characterized by self-driven, self-propelled effort.
Oh, that's so good. Mm-hmm. That whole thing, like, I'm just going to get it tattooed on my body is what I'm going to do.
This, like, entire paragraph.
Quoted Joe Robinson. It's just, like, right here.
He's like, oh,
I didn't okay. ask for this.
Weird, but okay. First fan. I like this here because he also brings in self-defeating heroics, because we do wear perfectionism as a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And I think people do wear the grind as like a, I'm so busy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have time for anything.
Oh, yeah.
Family these days?
Who needs a family? I have three startups.
Three startups making it all work.
Just correct.
I work all the time. But we do really wear it as a badge of honor. And it's funny because when we die, no one really cares
that
we did for work. No one cares. We talk about like the relationships that we built. Mm-hmm. What he highlights here as well, which is interesting. And it goes back to the studies from the Hardin Group that we introduced last episode. Mm-hmm. But when you have perfectionists in the workplace who are operating in this way, they create a very competitive work environment. And he says it set off conflicts with colleagues who feel that they then have to go above and beyond to do what's productive and to just keep up, you know?
Yeah.
It makes me think of a job I had where, you know, everyone was expected to be in office working constantly. And it didn't matter if it was Friday at 4:30, you had to be there at your desk, even if you didn't have work to do. You just had to be sitting there. You could be like, literally just playing solitaire on your computer.
But as long as your butt was in your chair.
But as long as you were there and you were at work, like, oh, good for you, man.
I hate that, because it's like, then again, you're putting on the image of like, I'm at work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have the image of I'm working, and they're not even working.
Yeah. And there was literally someone who'd like walk around the office floor 4:30 on a Friday just to like make note of who's there. Interesting, huh? So-and-so clearly doesn't care about their job. They're not here at this time. It's like,
I hate that so much. Because then the people who are there might not even be working. Mm-hmm. They might just be sitting in their chairs. That's mm-hmm. so annoying.
Probably. And I do think it's kind of like an old school like way of running an office. Mm-hmm. I do think COVID changed a lot of things with like some form of a hybrid modality where mm-hmm. there's working from home and working in office some days, or completely working from home, or whatever it might be. But I do think there's something to say, and maybe Ryan, you could weigh in a little bit here, where it's like, historically, men run the workplace, right?
Yeah.
And so did this expectation come from them of like, oh, is just appearing who works hardest? Like, if you're still in the office at 5, maybe you're going to get the promotion because you're showing that you care about your work, even if you're not really doing anything, but you're there overtime.
Yeah.
So like, is that where rewards come from?
Yeah. Ryan, as someone who's been like in the corporate world longer than we have and is a man, what do you think?
Yeah. I'm just
longer
like,
than you have? Is that what? How do you know my life? No, I have definitely seen that. I've been in a place for almost 5 years where I was expected to be in there doing something. And if you weren't doing that, grab a mop, you know, grab a mop, go and do that, which I can appreciate. However, it's not the right way to do it. It's not the new age way to do it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I think that if people get their work done, and then they are appreciated by those employers, then they'll probably want to do their best. And I just wanted to do it until I was done. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it is like going the extra mile and picking up the mop, it's like, are you doing it to be helpful or just to like
get that promotion? Or just to look helpful. Yes.
Which is so funny, because then we're rewarded for that perfectionist behavior. And you are rewarded by like getting that recognition and getting that like, wow, so-and-so just really puts in the extra mile and neglects their family, you know?
Yes.
So let's just, or not even neglects their family, because that's like painting bad fathers or something like that, which I don't believe is the case, because ultimately like they're doing it because they want to like be better and they want to provide or whatever.
Or like provide, yeah.
Yeah, I can't speak to the intention of that. So I like rewind that a little bit, but still it's like maybe they would rather be somewhere else doing something else. Like maybe they have hobbies, maybe they have friends they could be hanging out with, maybe they have like a side hustle they could be working on, you know, mm-hmm. just something else. But I just think it's the old school way of working needs to like have a bit of a shift. And I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is shifting. I just, it still is just so, I don't know. It's like maddening to me almost how like the perfectionist behaviors get rewarded. Mm-hmm. 'Cause then it talks about right here where he said, you know, everyone else then feels pressure to keep up and to follow suit and to follow that perfectionist thing, you know? And I actually have a friend, adjacent coworker. So I do marketing for UVU. It's a university here in Utah. And each of us are dedicated to a different part of the school. So I do marketing for the School of Education, and I have a coworker who does marketing for all of the athletics at UVU. Mm-hmm. And
that's a lot.
so every sports team at UVU, he does the marketing for all of them. Obviously, there is like a team, like he has people to help him, but like he's like over all of it. And he has no time for anything. And I asked him one day, I was like, why do you do all of this? Because he does his 9 to 5 and then he works every single game. So wow. Every athletic event at UVU, he's at every single one of them. And he's like, he just has no time to do anything. And he said, if I don't do this now, I will fall behind because this is what everyone else in the industry is doing. And it makes me sick because if just like a few people would stop, right? Then that would stop getting glorified. And the standard of like what you need to do to get to the next level would become more normal and more healthy. But because yeah. everyone is trying to run faster than everyone and faster than any of us even have strength to, like everyone's just getting burnt out. And he literally mm-hmm. like, he just would talk about it. He's like, yeah, I never really get out. Like I literally go to work and then I go to sports things. Then I go home to go to bed and then I wake up and do it the next day. And it's all because that's what everyone else in his industry is doing. And if he wants to get to where he wants to be, that's what he has to do. And I just, I understand that's so if hard. That's like an old school way of things like working, but I just don't think it's healthy. And I don't think that's where we need to be. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it's necessary to work that way anymore. It feels a little antiquated yeah. to me, you know?
Oh, and then it's so tricky though, because then it's like to really be at the top of something or to really like make it big time. Do you just have to do that?
I mean, because that's fair too, right? Like if you want to be the 1%, you gotta work harder than 99% of people. But I don't know. I just don't like it.
I know. I'm like,
I don't know. I feel like it's more important to just show up where you can than show up where you have to or show mm-hmm. up where you should. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I'm wrong about that. But
there are consequences to that, because if you know the story of Lance Armstrong, that's exactly why they did all of the doping, because everybody mm-hmm. else was doing it and they ended up doing okay. things that ended up really damaging their careers, which I was also in a position, not in doping, but like that's that same job that I was in. They were also asking us, like, we expect you to stay later because you want the company to you know, you want the company to do well. So it's there's consequences with that, because then you don't ever have a balance.
I like the analogy of like doping. Mm-hmm. Like when are you getting into an extreme that's no longer natural or normal or healthy?
Yeah.
Not I think that's maybe the line. I think maybe that's the line where perfectionism comes in, where it's mm-hmm. like, because right, perfectionism is the belief that you can be perfect or at least look perfect. And none of us can be, because we're all human and all flawed, but you can perform on a supernatural / perfect level if you're doped up, right? Like yeah, if you totally. Take things that like will get you there. And so I really like that analogy of like, are you, you know, doing things that are harmful for you in the long run, but are getting you to that perfect level for now.
Right.
I think that's a good way to look at it.
There was also a word in here, resentment, that just came to my mind when Ryan was sharing that, because then you could build that resentment towards other coworkers or employees who are going like the extra mile or are staying late or are doing all these things or like doping to say.
Yeah.
Because then you're like pissed at them because then you have to.
Yes.
Or then you're mad at your leadership because like then you have to, because that's expected of you. And that's yes. just like not, that's not fair. So then this like resentment comes in. The last paragraph says, perfectionists spend longer than they have on a given task, reducing performance, and have a hard time delegating because no one can do the job as well as them. Not trusting others results in slow turnarounds, more burnout, and resentment again.
Yeah.
So not a positive vibe in this, you know, what Joe Robinson is saying. His solution is to book him for coaching and keynote speaking and workshops and whatever.
Capitalism is alive yeah. and well.
But we bring in other solutions, which we'll like paint out through these studies, but also at the end, which is connectionism. I think of one boss that comes to mind through this whole thing, who's probably the busiest person I know. And he's a vice president at UVU. It's Kyle Reyes.
Oh, I love him.
The guy is incredible because he has a pretty demanding job. He has 7 children. And he has a church calling that requires a lot of him. He's a stake president, okay? So it's like so much on his plate. And I remember managing like his schedule and stuff when I interned for him. And without a doubt, every day there was blocked in family time and time for the gym, no matter what. And sometimes that required him to get up at you know, 5, 4:30, whatever, going to bed at like a late time too. I guess parents like develop this superhuman ability to function off of no sleep.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Ryan, do you agree?
I love how you asked that while my daughter is on my lap wanting to say hi to the podcast. So, well, yeah, we don't sleep. We don't do any of this. We don't, our life or our children or our job, honestly.
Or just both and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's all you've got.
Yeah. And maybe it's just like what we make it to because, and it sounds so much easier than I'm saying, really. And I understand that. But I did see in Kyle managing his schedule that, like, the things that really, really mattered made it onto the schedule. And, like, of his 7 kids, when they had birthdays, he had lunch with them or they came into the office. And even if it was, like, a super packed day and his family was coming in to visit and he had a meeting with the team, like, his kids would come in to the meeting. And he's just like, hey, kids, like, and introduce him to his coworkers. Like, they can, or his, what do you even call the people below you? Like,
your employees.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't know, because I'm like, they aren't his coworkers. Anyway, his employees and his team, and they all like knew each other, and they knew Kyle had a lot of kids. They knew he had a lot going on in his life, and he's always very transparent about that. And he also encouraged. I think it opened up the space for employees to also be like, yeah, I've got a big family too. Or I actually need to take an early lunch today because I got to go take care of this. Mm-hmm. Or because, you know, maybe my kid is sick or it's my kid's birthday or my partner needs help with this. Or like, you know, I was also going through a divorce when I worked for Kyle and I could not tell you how understanding he was through that.
Yeah.
And like, he took at least just like 10 minutes every day to be like, how are you doing today? What's the, like, where are we at? Are we survival mode? Are we barely, like, alive up here? Did you barely make it out of bed? Or, you know, are you doing okay? Like, always just to check in with me on a human level. And I didn't have to, like, pretend at work. Because I also knew he wasn't pretending about things.
Yeah.
So it just, like, created this environment on the team where people could be human. And but also like do their job because he struck a balance of like expectations and hey, like I need this to get done and you can delegate or you can bring on other team members or whatever. Like he just did it so well. So what I'm saying is like it's possible somehow.
Yes,
it's possible. How? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. But I think one thing is just accepting that we're human, allowing other people to be human. And I think a lot of it comes from leadership and creating that environment, which is an episode we'll get into a little bit later. But it is possible. Mm-hmm. And it is possible to be high achieving, to get so much done, to be an incredible leader and still allow space for people to be human.
Oh, yeah, totally. And something we've said in previous seasons is perfectionism doesn't care about circumstance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care. It doesn't care that you're going through a divorce. It doesn't care that you have 7 kids. It doesn't care that you have, you know,
outside obligations,
yeah. Doctor's appointments, birthdays, whatever it is. You must perform at your highest level, even above your highest level, right? At a supernatural level, at a doped up level at all times. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter the circumstance. And when you have leadership that believes that too, when you have a perfectionist leader, that is so harmful and dangerous to your employees' mental health, to your employees' productivity, to the company culture overall. Because then, you know, then when, you know, freaking Kyle, when his kids need to come into the office, like if Kyle's a perfectionist leader, he wouldn't let them do that. And then mm-hmm. his family relations are suffering. And then all of his employees feel like, oh, well, I can't do that either. So then their families. And mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. it has this horrible ripple effect that is very hard to rein in once it's started.
Yeah.
And so it is that it's striking that balance of connectionism, right? Where it's, we're not going to act like we're doing our jobs perfectly all the time. We're going to acknowledge that life things happen, that circumstances mm-hmm. happen. And we're going to be flexible and adjust accordingly rather than force ourselves to fit this mold or this image that looks perfect all the time.
Because we should.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on Joe's or should we move on to the next one?
Joe killed it, honestly.
I know. He did a great job.
Everyone should hire him.
Well done, Joe.
Well done, Joe. Our next study is by a man named Brad Ross. So Brad is one of the top illusionists in the illusionist realm. Industry.
Yeah. All 5 of them. I'm just kidding. and not a slide at Brad. It said on his page, it said top illusionist in the world. So
yeah, so he's like in the world, and he worked for like Disney lines and all this stuff, and he's like he's a big deal. All right, he's a big deal in the illusionist community.
Magician.
Yeah. And he now helps people take their personality or set of skills and strengths and use them to make their life's dreams come true and do what they want to do. His slogan is do what you love, love what you do. So he talks about perfectionism, and he says perfectionism behavior, I don't like how he said that, perfectionist behavior is self-destructive and addictive, but you won't likely stop to question the faulty logic that drives it and creates unbalance and unrest in your life because it is unattainable. Perfectionism isn't self-improvement. It's about looking after your reputation. You are motivated to please others rather than yourself. We seriously could do an episode on every line in that paragraph, because he just hits it so spot on. The fact that it's self-destructive and addictive, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's addictive because it's unattainable, because you can never get enough, right? We've talked about addiction where you know, with an addiction, you need a stronger and stronger hit, right? Mm-hmm. You need something more and more potent every time. That's why you keep going to it. And that's why, you know, I was watching The Social Network this week. It's the movie about how Facebook started.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
And in it, the actor who plays Mark Zuckerberg said, fashion is never finished. Mm-hmm. And Facebook is like fashion, where it's never finished, right? Yeah, there's never an end point to fashion. And I've thought about that a lot this week with perfectionism and with addictions, where with an addiction, it's never finished, right?
Yeah,
it's
never more. Yeah.
You never get to a point where you're like, okay, I'm done, mm-hmm. right? And with perfectionism, it is the exact same way, because perfectionism is unattainable. You cannot be perfect.
Yeah, you can't reach it.
You're never going to reach it. And so you're addicted to constantly trying to reach it over and over again, and which is why it's self-destructive. Mm-hmm. And then it creates that imbalance and that unrest in your life. And he touches even on people pleasing, where it's not about self-improvement. It's not about being a good employee. It's not about being a helpful friend. It's not about being a good person. It's about looking like that, and looking specifically like what someone else's version of a good employee is, mm-hmm. or someone else's version of a good person is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like that's the part that is addictive, because it's like that's where that quote unquote like hit comes from, because it feels so nice when like you do receive that applause, or you do like you are hitting it of what people want you to be.
Yes.
And you are like reaching that of what people expect from you, and they're like, oh wow, maybe they are perfect. Like they're so amazing. How do they do all that? It's just like that air of like, oh, they think I'm doing it. They think I'm perfect.
Yes.
They think I'm like achieving this. They think I'm a superhero. Like I can keep doing this. Like I need to keep chasing this. I need to it's now like maintaining that and doing it more and doing it for everyone else. And like all of these things, but it's just a snowball of like self-destruction, unhappiness.
Yeah. And we talked about this a lot too, where it's not sustainable. Like perfectionism, it will fail you eventually. Maybe it's years, maybe it's months, however long, it will fail you at some point. And when it does, it hurts and it's a big fall, and you have to then reconcile, you know, all of the facades that you have put up and figure out, you know, how to actually, you know, repair these relationships and maybe even build them from scratch. Cause there might not have been a relationship really there to start with genuinely.
Mm-hmm. And I think where this comes into work-life balance is within his slogan of do what you love and love what you do. Because the last sentence that you read said you are motivated to please others and not yourself. Then how are you supposed to like do what you love if you don't even care to do what you love, because you care about pleasing everyone else?
And you're only doing it because you should.
Yeah.
And then you're resentful.
So it's like his is like a lot of his lens or mindset is in working with your personality, your set of skills, and how do you turn that into something that works for you? Mm-hmm. Another thing that Joe Allred, the therapist, not Joe Robinson, said is that your lifestyle should drive what you do for work, not the other way around. Ooh, where work that. Drives your lifestyle, which I thought was very interesting. I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
That's really true. Like how you live and how you want to live, that should drive what you're doing. And that's something I talk about with Eli too. He's like, I want my life to look like this. Like I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to take time off and do these things. So then I want to do like X, Y, and Z. That like eliminates these certain careers because I want to be able to have this freedom.
Mm-hmm. And as is typical with perfectionism, it often puts the cart before the horse, right? Where your lifestyle should not be a means to an end for your career. Mm-hmm. Your career should be a means to an end for your lifestyle. And we just so often get it twisted because perfectionism is the worst. And suddenly your whole life is about your career and mm-hmm. your lifestyle suddenly is at the mercy of your career and achieving and all that jazz. Yep. So, yeah. He goes on to say, the trouble is that perfectionism paralyzes your life. You miss out on all kinds of opportunities, both at home and at work, because you are too afraid that you will be less than perfect. Ironically, we live in an imperfect world where you are struggling to be perfect. As a result, you miss out on important family events like your kid's soccer game because you are too busy focusing on perfectionism with work. And that draws you away from your family and creates an unhealthy work-life balance. So again, that just touches on the, you know, the obvious point of perfectionism, that when you're focused on being perfect all the time, especially at work, it bleeds into the other parts of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard, I think, to sever, you know, being a perfectionist at work and then being able to come home and just not be, you know, mm-hmm. it bleeds into it way too easily.
Yeah. One thing I just have in my mind so well is when my parents would come to my soccer games as a kid. And sometimes they'd be late, you know, life happens. And I just remember, like, if I were warming up or the game is about to start and I like look in the stands and they're there and I'm like, you know, as a kid, it means everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think those videos have kind of been trending on Instagram, at least in my feed, where it'll say, like, showing up matters. And ooh, yeah. It'll be, like, a kid in a play, you know, or yeah. a kid, whatever. And they see they're, like, looking for their parent and they see them. And it's just like that, oh, like, they care, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what parents want. Like, families, I think, for the most part, they want that. And that's what I was just going to call him Bob because his last name's Ross. Brad.
Bob Ross.
Is trying to illustrate is like, do what you want. Do what you love. Like, do you want to be there for your kids? Do it. Like, yeah. Who cares about what you're really doing at work, you know? And I remember one thing my parents did too is they would have like, I would have mom-daughter dates or father-daughter dates. And I remember one time my friend called me. It was in high school and I was going to a movie with my dad. And she was like, hey, you know, what are you up to? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm actually just on a daddy-daughter date. She was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. Like, I wish I did that with my dad.
Aw.
My dad is like the most tender-hearted guy. He starts crying. Really is. No, he literally started crying. He was like, oh my gosh.
I love him.
He's like, that's so sad. Should we like invite her? Should we bring her to come?
He's
I'm like,
so oh, cute. I love gosh. Him.
My dad is Shane. So sweet. And my dad is not perfect at this work-life balance. No one is, really. Mm-hmm. Really, no one is. But I know one thing my dad did do to the like very best of his abilities was show up for us. Like he would show up to my soccer games and he would do dad-daughter dates and he would like do these things for me because I know he cared about me. So in that way he would like show up. And sometimes the stress of work and the stress of what was going on in the office would follow him onto our dad-daughter date and he wouldn't be able to be present or he wouldn't be able to like be engaged, which is something else we can like touch on, but he was showing up and he was trying. And yeah. I think people really see, like, people can feel that connection when it's, like, genuine. When someone's trying, like, you can feel it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And perfectionism likes to make you think that, you know, that doesn't bleed through. But I actually would love to hear from Ryan.
Oh.
Because, you know, he does this. He has a family and he
works.
Works. And yeah, like, do you, like, just what are your thoughts, if you have any, on this? What's your perspective?
It's very hard. It's very hard to balance everything. And especially since we have like smartphones, it's even more difficult. I had the same experience with my parents. They were always there and I appreciate it. But now like I know that I'm not as present as I could be because of this phone. Because my parents didn't have that phone.
Oh,
but like I'm very much a multitasker. And like to go back to what you guys were saying earlier. Is that I like to start right out of the gate, like the best that I can do at anything. And then before I know it, it's expected of me. And then it bleeds into my family life. It bleeds into my spiritual life. It bleeds into so many different things to where I'm proofing things while I'm at church or I'm proofing things while I'm during family dinner. You know, it's a hard balance, but if I find time to just give it to my kids, they really appreciate it.
Do you ever feel like you like beat yourself up for not being able to show up or not being able to show up as much as you want to be? Like, does that
what's crazy is I beat myself up way more about the things that really don't matter. Because I know that I'm capable of doing it. With kids, it's just like, well, I guess that's trauma that they're going to have. You know, there's nothing that you can do in the end. But with work, it's just like, I could have done that, or we could have done this better, or me specifically should have done that, you know?
Yeah. So. Interesting. Sounds like you're shitting on yourself.
Yeah, it took a lot of shits, honestly.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, my mom beats herself up about every little thing too. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what I'm gathering about parenthood and parenting. It's just about how little you can traumatize your kids. Cause you will.
You, like, yes.
Because that's life.
Yes.
They're being raised by, like, imperfect people. Mm-hmm. But I think something I've realized in my mom too, and maybe a little bit for you too, Ryan, is, like, it's important to know for your kids to know how much you care about them. And it's important for them to know how much you do work for them and how much you are doing everything for them. Like, that kind of is important to my parents because they do so much. But even when you think of that, it's like, oh, the thing that matters to them is, like, what I think of them then.
Oh, it's
like, oh, do they know that I do everything? Do they know that I'm, like, working so hard for them and doing this, this, and that? And I think it's just about, like, how do they feel? Like, do my kids feel loved? Do they feel this, this, and that? Like,
yeah.
I think one cool thing I saw also on Instagram, where we get all of our information these days, mm-hmm. TikTok and Instagram, it was about a guy who grew up in theater, and he now is, like, a Broadway performer, you know, on Broadway, incredible dancer, incredible singer, and his dad really wanted him to play sports and stuff, but when his son got into theater and dance, his dad immediately signed up in dance classes. Isn't that cute? Isn't that so cute? And it wasn't even like, that. Son, like, do you know I'm paying for this all? Like, I hope you know I'm providing all this for you and blah, 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 blah. It wasn't even about that. It's like, or it's not even like, I enrolled in dance classes for you. Do you know that I did all of this for you? Because then it's about what they think. It's just like, I want my son to feel so loved and supported. So I'm going to do this.
Oh, I love that.
I'm going to do, anyway, I don't know. I just thought it was so cool. Oh, it just came to me. That guy, he was on Big Brother.
Oh, cool.
It wasn't from social media. It was from Big Brother.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Which I love reality TV. You all know this.
Alicia actually got me into Survivor. Oh. She's been talking about it for literally years. And I don't know why. I think I saw a clip on Instagram or mm-hmm. something like that. And I was like, wait, that actually was really interesting.
Oh, it's so
And I was
cool.
like, should I watch the show? Even though Alicia's been trying to get me to do it for years. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually watching the season that she named her dog after. The one with Tony.
Tony. So. Season 28. Yeah, it's one of my biggest achievements when I get people into Survivor, really.
I've loved it. It's been great. Right now. It's been great. But yeah, that's our study, for lack of a better term, from Brad Ross. He's a consultant in this space, so he has a lot of his own studies and research that he's brought into it. And so we just really, especially with this season, we really just want to take expertise from people who are doing what we're doing and who maybe have some more, you know, miles on the road of what we're doing and package it for you guys to be able to digest really easily mm-hmm. and be able to apply immediately, hopefully, mm-hmm. right? So that's Brad Ross. He really wants us to be able to do what we love and love what we do, which mm-hmm. I think is great. And perfectionism gets in the way of that
yes,
all the time.
Because it wants you to do what other people want you to do.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Actually, super quick, I'm going to share one more thing about this specifically. And it has to do with my sweet boyfriend, Eli, who's actually here.
Hello.
Eli, I want you to come say hi on the camera. I realized I've kind of been making eyes at him sometimes. And, like, I did an I love you. And he's right here. Hi. Say hi.
Oh. He did it.
Wow. I love you. He's the biggest fan of Popping Perfectionism, truly. He's always like, when are you going to drop a new episode? Mm-hmm. When are you going to do this, this, and that? But Eli currently is working in Honduras, and he is in construction. He works for a general contractor. I'm looking at him to make sure I'm saying things right. General contractor. He does project management, and they mostly do commercial stuff, but they also build temples for the Church of Jesus Christ, and they do this abroad in Honduras, for example. So they sent him towards, like, you know, the end of this project. They're wrapping up the temple. There's a lot of finishing touches, whatever. So he's helping out there. And it's a lot of work. He's been working like 10 to 12 hour days constantly. But one thing I think Eli does really, really, really well, and this isn't just to, like, gas you up since you're here, I would say this anyway, but he does, like, make time for the things that are important to him. And it's because Eli really is not a people pleaser at all. Like, for better and for worse, he will do what he wants to do. And mm-hmm. I think it's great, though, because it's something I struggle with. Like, I want to do what other people want me to do sometimes. And a way that this really benefits our relationship is he's there at this project for like 3 months, maybe more, who knows? Hopefully just this, like the 3 months span. But he like has made time for me. And I just barely got back from Honduras because we like went on vacation and he took some time off to be like, well, I'm here in this beautiful place. Like, we should capitalize on this. So mm-hmm. we went on like a vacation to an island called Roatan. That's just off of Honduras. It's still like part of the country. But seriously, one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, ever in my life. And then to make everything better with the holiday, he surprised me and came home for Thanksgiving. I thought he was just going to stay in Honduras, but it's like, oh, it's the holiday, whatever. But he just like does what he wants to do and creates the life that he wants. And I think that's a beautiful part of not being a people pleaser and just doing what you want to do because you like make it happen regardless mm-hmm. of what other people might think of you. Because yeah. I would be like, oh my gosh, but what is my boss going to think? Is he going to think this, this, and that? Like, I don't know. My mind would just run rampant with those things. Yeah. So I just had to give him that little shout out of like, make it happen. You know, there's no better time than like right now. And don't let like the youth and, or what's that saying? The youth is like wasted on the wrong people or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
like we're just young right now. Like make these things happen. Like do what you want to do and not what everyone else is like trying to force you to do or push on you. You mm-hmm. can like do it right now.
Yeah. That reminds me of there's a a woman named Celeste Headlee who gave a TED Talk on 10 ways to have a better conversation.
Mm, I've never heard of that.
It's a great TED Talk. Mm. I highly recommend it. And she talks about how at one point she talks about listening, right? And how important listening is to having a good conversation. And she says, you know, she talks about all of these cues and signals that people are taught to give. You know, when you're listening, you're supposed to nod and you're mm-hmm. supposed to mm-hmm, and mm-mm. you're supposed to, you know, paraphrase back. And she said, but here's the key, folks. She's like, if you're actually listening to someone, you don't need to pretend that you're actually listening to someone. She says a lot better than I just did, but she basically says like, you don't need to look like you're listening if you're actually listening. And that's something that I've noticed as I've gotten to know Eli as well. But then people who aren't people pleasers, they're not sitting there being like, okay, am I looking like I'm listening to them? Am I nodding? Am I saying the things I'm supposed to say? They're just actually listening. Mm-hmm. And if you're just actually listening, whether you're giving those cues or not, that's the goal, right? Mm-hmm. That's the goal is to be a good listener. And so like with the example you just gave with Eli, right? It's like, is his work getting done and is it getting done well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then at the end of the day, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. And if he takes a week off to go, you know, on vacation with you or whatever, like he doesn't need to not take that time off so that he keeps looking like a good employee and mm-hmm. looking like a guy who's getting his work done. He's getting his work done and he's doing it well.
Right.
And so you don't need to like constantly, you know, to make this an analogy, giving these cues, right, of life where it's like, okay, I'm going to nod and listen and mm-hmm, and whatever that looks like in your life, I'm going to do this and this and this. So it looks like I'm doing this, this, and this. If you're actually doing it, then you don't need to look pretend like you're doing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like just actually do it. And I think that's a good solution and a good way to assess if you're living an authentic and connectionist life is if you're doing things to do them.
Yeah.
And because you want to do them and not resentfully and all of that jazz.
And I think some people that are trying to appear as if they're doing their job well and you kind of, if you look deeper, they're actually, you know, the projects that they're doing or whatever they're asked to complete isn't very like it's not completed or maybe they skip certain steps or maybe whatever, but they're just like pretending to look like they're okay. They're probably not okay.
Yeah.
So I think take that as a signal sometimes too. If someone's not doing well at their job, but they're trying so hard to appear and pretend like they're doing good at their job, like that might be a very human moment to be like, all right, they're pretending to hold it together and they can't. So like, what's yeah. going on over there?
Yeah. You know? And like connect with them.
Yeah. Connect yeah. with them. Be like, hey, and it's not a moment of like, hey, you're really sucking at your job. Can you pull it together?
Hi, you're doing really bad.
Yeah. It's like, hey, what's going on? Like, I notice you might not be like totally mentally here. Or are you doing okay? You know, what's yeah. going, just want to check in on you. Or like, hey, I noticed with it. Cause it also could not be a big deal, like a big family thing. It could be like that. They just genuinely don't know. And they're afraid to ask for help.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it could be 100 other reasons, but it's like a very, very human moment. I know sometimes when I like don't know what I'm doing, but I want to appear like I know what I'm doing, then you just like exactly what you just said. You pretend you know what you're doing
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't always work out sometimes. because you're not actually just being human and being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't.
Yeah. And I think there is a difference between the whole, like, you know, fake it till you make it. Mm. I think there's real power behind that. Yeah, like, yeah. I really think that sometimes you really do just have to, you know,
do what you can,
fake it till you make it. Yeah. And then you make it. But again, I think the key to that, to delineating between if it's healthy or not, is what is your intention behind it? Are you just going to, you know, fake it till you make it because that's what you have to do to get there? Or are you faking it to look like you know what you're doing? You know what I mean? Which I know is it's a very thin line between those two. But it's just, it goes back again to like the why, are you doing it?
I think you just struck where a lot of my imposter syndrome comes from. And it's that very saying of like, fake it till you make it.
Mm.
I don't know if I like that saying actually. How? Yeah, I don't know because like, because for me that does bring up a lot of imposter syndrome. Because even if I do fake it till I make it and I actually made it, like I'm doing it. I'm doing a good job. Like even let's say imposter syndrome on the podcast where it's like, am I qualified to talk about this? Like. Yeah. I know I am. I know I add value here. So why do I have that imposter syndrome? And it's sometimes the idea of like, I just got where I am because I'm faking it.
Oh, you know? Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
So it's like, maybe just like do your very best and you'll make it.
Okay. Yeah.
Like do your human best. And maybe that's like the sensitive me that I have to talk to, like the, you know, the child version of me where I don't know. So it could be going too deep, but maybe, and then maybe this is a complete tangent. But if you're just doing your best and if you're prioritizing the things you want and the things that you can, then you will make it.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, we're all fine, guys.
Even if it doesn't look exactly how you thought making it would look or when you thought making it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
You will. It shows again and again. If you show up, you'll get there.
Yeah.
If you just keep showing up.
The very last study we're going to talk about is very geared towards physicians. So we drew, like, kind of specific things from here that apply to everyone, not just physicians. But the article is called Keep Perfectionism in Check Through Work-Life Balance. An excerpt from it says, physician leaders can help keep perfectionism in check by advocating for work-life balance. They could offer treatment programs that address this issue. This was shared by a doctor, PhD, blah, 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 with a bunch of letters after his name. So an important person. He said, common conditions associated with perfectionism include anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, depression. Nice.
I have all three of those. That's crazy.
This is what I call the holy.
the holy trinity three. Of my personality.
Yeah. For me, it's the depression, the anxiety, the ADHD. Love it.
Depression, anxiety, OCD.
OCD, PTSD.
Or a match made in heaven.
Match made in heaven. He says, while there's nothing wrong with having high standards, the problem in perfectionism is when people set impossibly high standards and judge their self-worth based entirely on whether they meet these impossibly high standards. Anna, what does that sound like?
That sounds like our podcast.
Maybe the two dimensions of perfectionism.
Yeah.
That we talk about. That's like, that's all of perfectionism. That's what the setting the high standards, unrealistic expectations, followed by self-criticism. It's the cycle that we talk about all the time.
Yes, because you have these unrealistic expectations that are called unrealistic because they are unrealistic.
They're not real.
They're not attainable. And then if and inevitably when you don't meet those, you fall into self-criticism.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I should have done better. I should have been this, blah, blah, blah. And then to eradicate that, you're like, okay, well, then I'm just going to set my expectations higher. Mm-hmm. And so then it just keeps getting worse. It's quite literally the definition of a vicious cycle.
Yeah. And what's interesting about the perspective of this article is they are physicians and doctors, and all of them are talking about how this is not healthy. Like it's literally not healthy for us to live this way. And I forgot to copy and paste this like clip from it, but they offer some solutions, and a lot of them are therapy.
Wow.
Gentlemen and women, sisters, brothers,
wow,
the everyone listening, because that can help you combat these expectations that you are placing on yourself, that you're getting set on you from maybe leaders, from maybe partners, family, or just society in general. I don't know. But just getting a different perspective to navigate these expectations and then the self-criticism that follows.
Yeah.
Because there are solutions to it. And it's like it's affecting your health. Like there's a clinical issue with perfectionism in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've seen specifically with my dad. Again, my dad is like the sweetest guy, has a heart of gold. And he is a business owner, entrepreneur. He, you know, is self-employed and done really well for himself, but it's because he's worked so incredibly hard. And one thing that he shares with me all the time, I'm sure everyone's dads kind of do this, where they share like the same 10 stories a lot.
The dad lore?
Yeah. Yes. When they're like, you know, giving you that message that's like, this one's going to get him, you know? Yeah. And my dad says, when, you know, I was a baby, it was just me and my older brother, every day on the way to work, he would pull over at the same spot. It's by these train tracks that were by our house, and he would throw up from stress every single day, because it's like, I have to provide for my family. I have to make it. I have to like do this. And he was physically ill from stress and anxiety and pressure and expectations. And like, can I do it? Can I make it?
Holy.
And I really, oh, wow. Now, real emotions. Like, I really feel bad for like all of the guys that feel that way, because I do think the majority of that expectation falls on men, mm-hmm. like our providers. And it breaks my heart to like think about that, because I think about the beautiful life my dad has provided for me. And he's like done everything for me, and he's given me a home and given me food and given me clothes, and like I've never had to want in my life. And he was like crippling himself from stress and anxiety and just the pressure constantly daily of like, can I make it for my kids? That's like, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's really, really hard to handle. And like, I feel it for like all of those dads or moms or people that are trying to provide. Like, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Providing for myself is a joke. I like, yeah. I don't even eat lunch most days. That's so unhealthy. Like, how am I supposed to feed a child? Like,
oh, totally. And I'm like tearing up with you tearing up about your dad. Cause like, I know your dad, and mm-hmm. like, he is just like one of the best men. Like he's, and it just, it hurts me to think about him, you know, throwing up every day. And like, I also, as you were talking, was thinking about my dad and like the version of my dad that I never got to know or like see, because he was so crippled. I love that word mm-hmm. you used, crippled by this perfectionist standard of like, I have to provide, I have to provide. Because my dad was a teacher.
Yeah.
He still, you know, he still is in that realm, but he was a teacher growing up with six kids. Like we did not have money. Right. Like, and it's that pressure of like, you know, on the two ends, your dad's an entrepreneur and it's all on him to provide and get his business going. And then my dad, you know, has this set income that he can't really change, and he's got to figure out how to provide for six kids. And like, and just that, mm-hmm. I it makes me so sad that we, for so many years, had to get to know our crippled fathers that were crippled by perfectionism. You know, our dads that, you know, before they had these expectations, before they had these standards come at them, before perfectionism worked its way into their lives and their brains, were different versions of themselves, were lighter, happier, freer versions of themselves. And what we were robbed in our relationships with them because of perfectionism. It just, it makes me crazy when people talk about perfectionism and they think, you know, it's this thing that has all these good results and all these good outcomes. Cause like, we're examples of, hello.
Hi. Like, my feelings.
It's so much has been robbed from both of us.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our relationships with like our dads and with our family members and our friends, that, you know, when someone comes out of the woodwork and is like, oh, well, perfectionism's not that harmful and it actually makes you really good at life and it actually has all these things. It's like, yeah, maybe. No. But the question that perfectionism always boils down to is at what cost? Like, at what cost? It does have good outcomes. It does have redeemable symptoms. But what is it costing you? And mm-hmm. we're examples of what that's costed. Your dad throwing up on the side of a road is an example of what's that costed.
It's like, awesome. You know, like, that's so hard. That's so heavy. Like, it cost a lot. It cost his sanity, his health. Like, and then the emotional capacity that I had with my dad, too, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because that, like, drew so much from him emotionally. So how much is left then?
Yes.
For family when he gets home.
Yes, exactly.
And I can attest, sometimes not a lot. Mm-hmm. Like really, really not a lot. And I think what some people see then is like, oh, fathers are just so absent. It's like maybe because they were dying on the side of the road before they went to work.
Yes.
Like, and I think men tend to like, you know, they struggle to voice their feelings and what they need and to like have that healthy balance, because they're also expected to be strong, to like be the ones that are really, really strong. And it's really wrong. It's really sad. Mm-hmm. And in a way, like perfection than is demanded from our providers.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know. It's not, but then when you look at it, it's like, that's not really what I wanted. Like, I just wanted a dad that like loved me, and he did.
Yeah.
And he was like there for me. I'm not saying he didn't do those things, but like, he was so stressed about other expectations that were put on him and like, can I make it? And I wish like the little kid me, I mean, obviously we don't have context, just to tell him like, you did it. Like, you did those things. And even to this day, when I tell my dad, like, you've provided everything for me. Like, you did it. You're an excellent dad. Like, he still gets emotional because it's, he thinks back to himself, who was like so sick, thinking like, am I going to be able to do this? I don't know. And yeah, it's a lot. So then what, going into connectionism, right? This is, that was the last article we want to talk about. Now we just want to talk about connectionism for this last bit. I think don't always expect yourself to completely leave work at work then.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to imagine my dad, right? If he like comes home, a lot of what he loved to do is watch TV, like sports and the news, and like kind of de-stress in that way. When you can really use that as a point of connection, mm-hmm. where my dad now that I'm old enough too, because you can't go to like a 5-year-old and be like, let me connect with you on my terribly stressful day, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's like, he can use that as a point of connection, human to human, adult to like adult, where it's like, dude, my day really sucked. I had to do blah, 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 blah. And we can, you know, I can feel for him on that level. And then we could be like, all right, dad, now let's like leave it and let it be.
And being real about it.
Yeah.
And being real about it. Like I shared a story on the last episode about how my dad said something at work that like he regretted or whatever, some teacher got mad at him. And he told me about how it ruined his whole weekend, right? And mm-hmm. how he was like so anxious about it and thinking about it. And when I was growing up, my dad would have never told me things like that.
Oh, wait, you shared this last episode.
So my dad would have never told me something like that. And he told me this, and I was like, I just thought back to when I was growing up, if he would have just expressed that, you know, when I was growing up and been like, hey, I had this thing that happened at work. I feel really dumb about it. It's getting to me. Then I wouldn't have, you know, as a 14-year-old had to spend the whole weekend wondering, oh, why is dad not here? Why is dad absent? Why is dad not?
Because is he mad at me? Yeah. Does he love me?
Yes. That's translated as like, oh, I did something wrong. Why doesn't dad want to spend time with me? Why doesn't dad want to talk to me? And instead, right, if these fathers could be given the space to talk about vulnerabilities and talk about these things, to connect, how much healthier their home lives would be, mm-hmm. and how much more, you know, that trauma that is inevitable for kids, no matter what kind of parent or what parent you are, will happen, like how much lessened that can be or how much better handled that can be.
Mm-hmm. This is actually crazy, because I think this is where I learned that caretaking attribute as a kid, because mm-hmm. my parents did have a lot of stress. I mean, my mom worked too. She was an interpreter. She is an interpreter for deaf people, mostly in like hospitals and things like that, or schools is where she does her work. But they're stressed. And then you have stress of marriage and stress of all these things. And kids are just like, how do I make them okay?
Yes.
Like, how do I make my parents okay? Is it because of me? Did I do something wrong? Like, and this is where I get my overthinking personality, where it's always like, if someone's not talking to me, it's because I did something wrong. It's because they're mad at me. It's because blah, 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 blah. And even Eli being in town, like, work is really stressful, right? He took off time to come be with me, which is so great. But then, you know, work is demanding a lot. So if he's like having to deal with a lot of work, which he has a little bit, and if he's stressed and anxious, then I'm like, oh my gosh, are we fighting? Like, did I, you know, that's mm-hmm. just like the caretaker Alicia, the people pleasing Alicia. That's like, something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
But Eli and I have had a lot of good connectionism, and we talked about this a lot actually this weekend, where he's like, I'm trying so hard to leave work at work, and I'm trying so hard not to like bring it over to you, and you don't deserve to like feel my anxiety. You don't deserve to feel all this and deserve to like have an absent version of me. And he is so like kind of just stressed and thinking about like, I'm bringing this onto her, and that's like not fair. I need to be doing better at being present, which is so funny, like stressing so hard about being present. Like, I need to like not stress about this and blah, 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 blah. But I told him like, I don't expect you to fully do that. Like, I want to, like, I'm not taking on your anxiety. Like, I want to be here with you. Like, if you're stressing about work, like, talk to me about it then. Mm-hmm. Don't just like try and throw it out the door. Like, this is the connectionism moment, where it's like, hey, Alicia, I'm just feeling a lot with this.
Yeah.
And it's like, awesome, let's talk about it. And we have been able to like talk a lot about those things and stress at work and whatever. And then it's not like, in my mind, it's not leaving that space to question, is it about me? Is it because I'm like not doing well as a partner or whatever? And then he also won't have to have the stress of like, I'm just throwing this onto her and I just have to deal with it somehow, because then he's able to talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I think a good way to illustrate connectionism is an analogy by Brené Brown, where she talks about how when we are in those dark moments, right, with those dark emotions, it's like we're all in our own little pits, mm-hmm. right? And she talks about sympathy versus empathy. And sympathy is you know, your friend, your partner, whatever is in a pit, and you just yell down and you're like, hey, good luck down there, yeah, right? That looks sucks. Like it sucks. You got this. Empathy is getting in the pit with them, mm-hmm. right? And just sitting with them in the pit. And I think that's a big part of it, where we as perfectionists also feel that if we are putting that on someone else, we're asking them to fix it. We're asking them to pull us out of the pit, mm-hmm. when really most people don't want that, right? It's the whole adage yeah. between men and women. We don't want you to fix it. We just want you to listen.
Yes.
And it's like, we just want you to sit in the pit with us. And mm-hmm. there's a really amazing emotional intimacy that comes from that approach, where if you're just sitting in the pit with the person and not trying to fix it, but also not, you know, yelling down to them from above, mm-hmm. there's a lot of emotional intimacy that can come from that, that I feel like we miss out on even in the workplace, mm-hmm. right? Even in the workplace, and especially for men, because everything we've talked about, they don't feel that they have the space to do that or to ask for that.
Yeah. So maybe this is even more of a call to the girls and the ladies that are dating yes. or in relationships, assuming like the guy's the provider, because I think most of the time they are. But still, if you're yeah. the provider, whatever, in your partnership, for the one who like feels that way of providing, just like sit in the pit with them
yeah.
about what's going on. And you're going to realize like it's kind of dusty down there, and there's spiders and bugs and scary things. And you don't have to solve it, yeah. but just like sit there and be like, dang, this is dark.
This is rough. Yeah.
And they're like doing it for you too.
Yeah.
Which is so sweet. It makes me emotional.
Yeah.
It's like they're doing it for you. And like out of love and care. And I just think we need to like use these expectations that are put on us and the fear that like comes from them, and just like talk about it. Cause the second we even put it in the open, like even right now, just the feelings I feel towards my dad and like mm-hmm. the two men that are sitting in this room, like Ryan and Eli, just like everything they're trying to do to like be those providers, and what we can do as connectionists to like open the space to be like, hey, you know, part of the quote of connectionism. Connectionism is the belief that moments of pain, vulnerability, and uncertainty are opportunities for increased relational intimacy, which is like love and understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I wanted to, before we go to our takeaways, touch on the part of that definition that we've coined for connectionism, which is uncertainty. Right. And that moment of uncertainty, because providers, whether you're male or female, face a lot of uncertainty. Right. Your dad facing a lot of uncertainty. And it actually reminded me of the new Hunger Games movie, mm-hmm. The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. If you haven't watched it, maybe just fast forward the next 30 seconds. You haven't watched it?
No, but go ahead.
It's oh, no.
Okay. It's OK. You can spoil. It's
okay. Have you read the book?
No, go ahead. It's fine.
I can't.
No, you can't. You had to. Now you gave this like teaser.
Okay. Just okay. Okay. So basically, in the end, it follows the story of young President Snow, right, who okay. in the Hunger Games is the one who rules the whole capital, and then he eventually gets defeated by Katniss and whatever.
He's a bad guy.
He's a bad guy. He's the villain. Yeah. And in this prequel book and movie that have come out, it follows his story of basically how he rose up to power, and he falls in love with one of the tributes, which is one of the kids who get put in the Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, I won't say how.
Okay.
But I won't say how. But there is a moment where he loses control, where he loses the certainty. And you see through the whole book and film that he is obsessed mm-hmm. with keeping control and keeping certainty. And he loses that certainty, and he ends his relationship with this tribute.
Does he kill them?
Over this moment of uncertainty. But I watched that. I've seen the movie twice now in the last week.
Oh my gosh.
And I just thought about that so much, of how obsessed he was with control. And then when it came down to it, his love for control trumped his love for this person in his life. And how often I do that, right? How often I let my love for control trump my love for people and relationships in my life, and how much dies at the mercy of that.
Dang.
And how tragic that is, truly.
Dude, that's crazy tragic.
So yeah, so connectionism is embracing those moments of uncertainty and leaning into them, rather than isolating, shaming, and cutting off things because mm-hmm. of it. So
oh my heck. The very last thing I'll say before takeaways, sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good.
Just in the light of like thinking about providers, from like my perspective, it's also like providing what? Like when have we always made it about money? Because I also want like a provider in my family and being a provider as well myself. It's like thinking about what do you provide? If it's strictly money, then like, do you really just want to be a bank for someone? Or do you want to provide a safe space? Do you want to provide joy? Do you want to provide experiences? Do you want to provide memories? Do you want to provide support? Like, think about what you want to provide. And like, what does the person you're providing for want themselves to? And what do they like need?
Yeah. And financial security can be a piece of that safety be a piece of and a means to an end for that. Mm-hmm. Right. But as soon as you just become a bank for someone, that's a transactional relationship.
And that also is so dehumanizing.
Yes.
Because banks aren't human. They're not people. They don't have feelings.
Yeah.
They just give you something.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
Exactly.
So that might be a more realistic way to think about being a provider. As I was thinking about this, is like, just think about what you are providing. What do you want to provide? And I doubt you just want to be a bank. And I don't think someone just wants a bank either. But I think there's a lot of people that do. And that's a darn shame.
I want a bank with a great personality.
Me too. That's like cute and loves me.
Okay? Yeah. Like one. All right. Should we do some takeaways?
Take it away.
Takeaways.
Oh. Eli, was it just as good live? Perfect. He said perfect. Better.
That means a lot to me. I just got a hit of dopamine.
That's fine. Write it.
Okay. Takeaway number one, perfectionism at work bleeds into perfectionism at home. And the more aware of this we can be, the more we'll be able to stop that ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Number two, engaged work is not the same as perfect work.
Mm-hmm. And number three, people pleasing at work leads to more resentment at work and at home.
It's bad.
It's not good.
It's not good. It's very harmful. Yes. It was funny because we found some studies that were like, perfectionism is great for work. And we were like, no, that's not what we want.
We were like, XXXXX. delete.
And there are glamorous parts of it, but long term.
Yeah.
No, not bueno. Good. No, not bueno. Good. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, we love having you all. We'd love to hear feedback. I hope this resonates with you guys. Mm-hmm. And
my name is Anna.
My name's Alicia.
And this is Popping Perfectionism.